And but I looked at it and said, but I'm going to learn. I'm building a product that can change people's lives. I'm going to do it with people I enjoy. It's worth that risk to potentially fail.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Famous Failures, where I interview the world's most interesting people about their failures and what they learned from them. I'm your host, Ozan Marol. Today's guest on the show is Selena Tobaccowala. Selena is a serial entrepreneur who started coding in her Stanford dorm room in the late 1990s. Selena and her college friend Al Lieb co-founded Evite, which you might remember was the dominant platform for online invitations. After Ticketmaster acquired Evite, she served as Senior Vice President of Product and Technology at Ticketmaster. She then left Ticketmaster to become the President and CTO of SurveyMonkey. Selena is now back to being a founder. She started Gigso, a live fitness app that aims to improve global health. Gigso offers professional coaches teaching live classes to people of all fitness levels in all locations, making exercise accessible in people's busy lives. If you sign up for Gigso, which you can by going to iTunes or Google Play, and you input the promo code Ozan, so that's my first name, O-Z-A-N, you will get a free trial and a discount on the membership should you decide to sign up. Let me also note that this is not an affiliate deal, so I don't make a dime from any signups for the app. It's simply Selena's generous offer to our audience. In the interview, Selena and I discuss how Selena literally stumbled upon the idea for Evite when she was in college, the three questions that her father asked her to help her decide whether she should go with the uncertainty of a startup as opposed to the certainty of a salary job, the most valuable failures she experienced in building and growing Evite, how Selena and the SurveyMonkey team were able to scale the company rapidly, how businesses can go beyond paying lip service to failure and actually create a company culture where people are willing to fail and share those failures with others. We also talk about why she decided to go back to being a founder again with Gigso. As always, if you're enjoying these episodes, please take a moment to go to iTunes or Google Play and leave a rating and a review. That goes a really long way in spreading the word. In addition, if you'd like to keep in touch with me, I'm your host, you can join the Weekly Contrarian. The Weekly Contrarian is a short newsletter that comes out every Thursday morning. It shares an article that I wrote that week, along with recommendations for books, tools, apps, quotes, really anything that challenges conventional wisdom and helps you look at the world a little bit differently. And you can sign up for that in one of two ways. You can go to weeklycontrarian.com and just drop your email address, or you can text my first name, Ozan, O-Z-A-N, to 345-345, and you'll sign up for the newsletter that way as well. You'll also get my, if you sign up, you'll get my free ebook, The Contrarian Handbook, 8 Principles for Innovating Your Thinking. Without further ado, I hope you enjoy my conversation with Selena Tobaccowala as much as I did. Thanks as always for listening. Selena, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So take us back to the 1990s, please, to the days of the dot-com boom, to your Stanford dorm room where you first started coding. How did you come up with the idea for Evite?
And just to clear up, it was the late 1990s.
The late 1990s,
you're not aging me too much. But so we started a company, my co-founder and I, Al Lieb, in 1997. And the company wasn't Evite. We started with a very different idea, the product that was supposed to help developers create content. And we were engineers. We were computer scientists. We were still in school. And so we were just about building products, putting it out there. And so we worked on this like variety of products with no business experience for over a year. And in the summer of 1998, we had gone and we'd pitched this consulting firm about this web-based tool set for them to schedule their meetings. And the guys at the firm just couldn't comprehend how they might just do this over this thing called the internet. And so we left there and we said, that's it. We're going to work on something that's consumer-based. And we said, what if we help people schedule their lives versus schedule meetings? And so it was kind of born from that lunch that we came up with Evite.
You know, most college students spend their summers interning. you decided to start or co-found this company. Have you always had this entrepreneurial spirit, or how did it come about?
So it was Al initially who said, I'm going to start a company. And we had been friends since our freshman year in college. And he said, do you want to do it with me? And, you know, I looked around and I thought, you know, it was this time. There was Excite, there was Yahoo, there was Pets.com. There was so many different companies starting, so many people out of Stanford. And I looked at it and thought, you know, why not? There was this moment. Whenever I come to like a moment in my life, I always call my father. And there was this moment where there was the Stanford job fair. I didn't know whether I should go to the job fair. And I called my dad. And I was in this hallway outside of Evite. And I said to him, you know, what do you think? Should I keep doing Evite? And he asked me three questions. He said, first of all, do you enjoy working with Al? I'm like, oh, yeah, he's fantastic. And this is obviously played true in that we've now started Gixo together 20 years later. But then secondly, he said, well, are you learning? I said, yeah, I'm learning so fast. I'm thinking, you know, learning how to code, how to build real products, like learning about business. And he said to me, do you enjoy what you're working on? I was like, yeah, we love what we're working on. We love the product. We love the mission. And so my dad said to me, if you have all those three things, why not? Take the risk. And literally, it's been those three criterias, people, like product and mission, and what I'm learning, that has guided like every single career decision of mine since.
Those are such important criteria too, especially in a day and age when people are, and this has probably been the case for decades, but people want the sure thing, right? Most people, when they go to their parents for advice, the parents will say, well, go for the stable job with a steady salary, as opposed to the uncertainty that comes with the startup instead of the sure bet. But the three questions, and I love the are you learning part too, and are you excited about what you're doing? Those are the criteria that should guide not just your decision about what to do in terms of your career, really anything you're doing in life. So you had no business experience at the time. What were some of the biggest challenges getting Evite off the ground?
As I said, we were building many products. We had no idea which product was actually going to work. And at one time, we had more products than people. And I'm very, very clumsy. And so we had this Fry's computer underneath the desk. It was like a couple $100 that was the Evite server. And one day, I got up and I tripped and the cord came out and our phone rang. And somebody said, what happened to Evite? And I said, oh, we're plugging it back in. So we like plug it back in. And, you know, I run the SQL and I check the database and I was like, we're like, Al, there's a whole bunch of people using this thing. And so we had no idea. And so my dad flies out for a business trip and we're out to dinner and he looks and he says, you know, you need to hire a CEO. You know, you guys have no idea what you're doing. And, you know, it was the first product with Evite. Like my mom then used it to organize her Thanksgiving dinner. Like the very first Evite was my indoor soccer team. So like we had, you know, this thing was growing on its own and growing virally. We didn't know how to build it into a business. And so we teamed up with Josh Silverman, who's now the CEO of Etsy. He's done very well. And he came and joined us and he helped us really take it from this idea into actually raising capital, building a team, building a business.
So two things strike me as particularly interesting in your answer. One is that it sounds like you literally stumbled upon the right idea here. And two, and maybe this is like a fourth question to add to your father's list of three, but Seth Godin likes to ask, will they miss you if you're gone? That's a question for sort of guiding what you should be doing. If you stop the newsletter, if you stop the podcast, if you discontinue the app, will they miss you if you're gone? In this case, it sounds like it was a resounding yes.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing with Evite was it was before the term like product virality was a word. But obviously, you had built in marketing into the product, which was, you know, you were sending an invite to an average of 19 people. And they were then getting exposed to the brand and seeing what the product could do. And so it had this natural organic marketing channel that was just fantastic.
And looking back on your experience with Evite, starting it, growing it, and then I believe later it was sold to Ticketmaster, is there a failure that stands out as, aside from the stumbling over the cable, which turned out to be a blessing in disguise, is there a failure that stands out as being particularly valuable?
Yeah, and if you're comfortable, I'm going to talk about two of them.
Absolutely.
The first was our capital. So we raised, this is 1999, it was the height of the dot-com boom. We raised $37 million for online invitations. And it took us a long time before we, and this wasn't just us. If you looked at that dot-com era, the whole entire era was focused on eyeballs, right? Like how many people can you get to see your site? How many people are looking at you and page views? And it wasn't really thinking about the monetization and the revenue side. Like how are you going to actually monetize those page views? We started the ad model. And one of the things we did well was we actually brought some really key brands right away into advertising on eBay. And I do believe that's one of the reasons we're able to sell it. But, you know, we didn't look at the fundamentals of the business fast enough, which was, you know, you raise $37 million. What is the sort of multiple return and investors really looking for that? And therefore, how much revenue would you really need to bring in and how big would your site really need to be? And so that was a very, very kind of fundamental failure that we had as a business of taking too long to think about it. And we were very lucky to find a home for Evite. But if you think about it, there were hundreds of dot-coms that just fell off the face of the earth at that time. And some of the ideas, we even think about things like Instacart. I mean, there was Cosmo.com that was doing the very same thing in 2000. And so that was kind of one big failure that obviously resulted in, you know, having to lay off people on the team and really, you know, package up and sort of sell the business. So I do think that sort of the taking too much capital that I look at as really kind of the first. And then obviously the second is really not really looking at those fundamentals of the business and therefore having to be in a place where we had to let go people.
So you later ended up at Ticketmaster after Ticketmaster acquired Evite, and then you left Ticketmaster to become the president and CTO of SurveyMonkey. What attracted you to SurveyMonkey?
It was those same three things. So first of all, people. One of the most fabulous, fantastic leaders I've ever had the pleasure to work for was the CEO of SurveyMonkey, who was named Dave Goldberg. The first time I met him, I knew that he was going to be a remarkable leader and somebody I could learn a ton from. And then the second piece of it was product. Like with SurveyMonkey, we were trying to listen to people's voices to make better decisions, to have people be heard, whether it was for employee feedback, whether it was for customer feedback, and take their thoughts, their ideas, and help people make better decisions. Like what a good company mission. And then, you know, the third piece was learning, you know, it was a business that was doing already $20 million of revenue with, and I was going to be the 18th employee. So it had really had like the best EBITDA margins you could ever imagine. But we had the opportunity to take that business from 20 million and make it 10X, which we did. But taking a company through that scaling exercise, I had never done. I'd seen the small at Evite getting it from, you know, the zero to 10. And then it was at Ticketmaster where we were already at scale. And so I saw this unique opportunity to learn how to take a business that was a mid-size and get it to be into a scaled business.
What do you think were the key factors in getting it to scale so fast and so quickly?
As Dave said, you know, we did use the like 20-mile march that it wasn't necessarily that we were trying to scale it so quickly. We were actually trying to build both a company infrastructure, a customer model, culture that was actually sustained to build a long-term business. And so, you know, that is one piece of it, which is it wasn't necessarily this hockey stick. It was like we were seeing, you know, it was really nice, steady year-over-year growth. You know, the second piece of it, and I mentioned in terms of the culture side, which is, we did a lot of things to try to make sure that the company could scale to that from the 20 million to 200 million from a company culture, as well as just tactically, we did things like move the business international, which was a huge business opportunity, optimize, bring sort of the A-B testing and product rigor to an organization that didn't have it. So there were a lot of things that we're able to bring to the table to help it scale.
So it was more of a drip growth over time, as opposed to, as you said, this like what people imagine to be the overnight success, slow but steady.
I mean, it wasn't necessarily slow, but it was very steady growth.
Right.
And it was very much strategically is, okay, let's tackle international. Let's add on a whole new product line, which we did in terms of, you know, adding on SurveyMonkey audience. And so it was really year over year looking at how are we going to take this business to the next level.
So one of the things you mentioned with respect to why the company was able to scale 10x so quickly was the company culture. So I want to chat with you a little bit about that. And I want to talk specifically about the company culture as it relates to failure. Because as you know, being in Silicon Valley, there's the celebrate failure and fail fast and fail often mantra. Well, there are actually two components to this. One is companies tend to give lip service to allowing employees to fail, but then actually don't follow through in practice, right? For example, if you look at metrics for bonuses and promotions, they're all tied to success and not failure. So you might be, you know, saying to your employees, yeah, we're all about failure, but then when it comes to actually implementing it in practice, many companies fall short. So I'd love to hear your insights on how you approach that question. So how do you create a company culture where people are actually willing to fail? And not only that, but they're also willing to share their failures as opposed to hiding them or reframing them as successes.
It really resonated what you said with this idea of everyone saying they want to create a culture of failure, but then not necessarily putting it out there. And that was really one really big thing that I learned from Dave, which was how do you create that culture that allows the intelligent risk, that allows everyone to act like an owner. I mean, you have all of these cultural mantras on people's walls with talk about, you know, taking risks. And, you know, there were a couple keys in that. The first is for people to be willing to take risks and for people to feel comfortable taking those risks and fail, they actually need to understand the metrics of the business. Because if you don't understand the numbers that you are trying to move and there's not transparency around that across the whole organization, it is very difficult to be willing to feel comfortable taking that risk because you don't know what you're then trying to measure on the back end. And so one of the big things that we did at SurveyMonkey, and which I've replicated here at Gigso, was every month as a whole organization, we walked through the business metrics and really made sure that everybody understood them. The second piece of that, though, in that meeting where we went over the business metrics was that, you know, we were, as many companies in Silicon Valley are, we are a very data-driven company in terms of running A/B tests. And most companies will sort of walk through the successes, right? Like here's what we learned, here's the things we did. Well, we always included tests that failed. And the other piece of it was, and I think it was a pretty important piece, was that Dave would love to wager. Like he was definitely, and so we would all make bets on the tests. You know, so our head of growth, this amazing woman, Elena Verna, myself, Dave, like we would make bets on all of these tests. So when we would stand up there, when Elena or myself or Dave, when we were presenting the numbers, we were presenting these A/B tests, we would always make sure, like Dave had no problem saying, I bet on this test to win and it lost, or I bet on this test to lose and it won. And so this idea that, hey, you know, the CEO can be wrong, the president can be wrong, like we bet the wrong way, and like this person who put this test forward actually got it right. So how do you show that, like, it's okay to be wrong? It's okay to try something and actually be wrong. And it gives people the courage to then say, I'm going to try something, because if I'm wrong and it didn't work out, it's okay. But I'm going to be able to understand the metrics I'm measuring so that I can say what I learned. And that to me was just this huge key thing in making it an organization where people did feel comfortable making a mistake, making a failure.
That's so important, especially since if there's a perception that the leader of an organization can do no wrong, then it's really hard for the employees to come forward and challenge the leader or reveal their own failures. So it sounds like Dave had nailed this approach. So betting, and by the way, when you were talking about this, the book, I don't know if you read it, but it's by Annie Duke, Thinking in Bets.
No, I haven't actually.
Yeah, it's a great book. So she's a poker player and she writes about decision making under certainty. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So, and I think it's that important. Like people need to hear that no one knows all the answers, right? Like any idea might win. And they're sort of like, you know, it's like, and by democratizing access to the corporate data and making it available and making it out there, I think that empowers people to be able to make those decisions and take those risks and take those bets. You know, I say that one of my my favorite quotes is that Einstein quote, which is a person who never made a mistake, never tried anything new.
Right. So you're back to being a founder again, and with the same co-founder, right?
Yeah, same co-founder from Evite.
So what made you decide to do that, to jump back into the startup world?
My journey at SurveyMonkey was for 6.5 years. As many people know, 5.5 years, Dave passed away suddenly. And for me, that made me step back. Obviously, on a personal level, I was like heartbroken. And on a professional level, it really made me want to think about how I can use technology to make an impact on health and wellness. And Gixo, we are creating an amazing product with live coach fitness classes to really help people at any fitness level feel supported, feel engaged, feel excited to get going and get moving. And so that's what inspired me to start. But it was that same criteria where I went through and said, okay, I know I want to do something in health and wellness. Like, what is the best path for me to do that with? And obviously, on the people side, the fact that I could reconnect with Al and start a company again was just like amazing. On the learning side, I've never been a CEO. This is my first time. So, you know, at Evite, we brought in Josh. At SurveyMonkey, I had Dave. Ticketmaster, I worked for an amazing guy named Sean Moriarty. And so I've always had these amazing mentors above me, but I have never been the CEO. And so for me, this is a huge learning opportunity. I've never been responsible for raising money. And so there's all these things I'm learning. And then the third piece was the product. And that's what they're saying, the product and the mission of the company. Like, our mission and our, you know, is to help people to democratize access to live fitness experiences. All of the investment that has happened in health and fitness is for that luxury customer, that high-end, already fit, wealthy customer. And the average American is being completely left behind with no innovation. And so we saw this opportunity to really use technology to like change people's experience with fitness.
That sounds amazing. I downloaded the app yesterday. I signed up for it, and I'm really excited to try my first class.
That's awesome.
Obviously, when you started Evite with your co-founder, you had no business experience at the time. Now that you're back to being a founder again, is there anything that you're doing differently this time around? I'm sure there are a lot of things, but is there anything that jumps out at you as being significantly different?
And the number of differences are massive. You know, in some ways, there's like the positives of being the 22, 23-year-old, right? Like, you have no perspective, you have no opportunity cost, you know, you're just looking at everything as like totally fresh and totally new and totally exciting. And, you know, when you have 20 years of experience in your belt, there's also the positives, right? Which is that you have a network of people that can help you. You know, we're trying to figure out, okay, this fitness category is pretty noisy. There's lots of digital fitness apps. Our product experience is 10x better than any other one, but how do we break through the noise? You know, I've never been fully responsible for building a brand before. Well, you know, there's a whole network of people that are helping me, you know, and so having those relationships, having that network is fantastic. And so that's like one of the things that's like been so different. And obviously, it's like the, you know, day one of Gixo, Al and I literally sat down and said, okay, what do we want to learn out of this experience? And then what type of culture do we want to build? What company type of company do we want to build? This was before we had nailed down our idea.
Wow.
Just approaching it from a wholly different way of like, we want to build a sustainable long-term company versus, you know, when you're at 21, 22, you're just thinking about like, okay, how can I build like a cool product that people are going to like?
And what was the answer, since you mentioned two questions, what was the culture we want to build and what do we want to learn? What was the answer to the what do we want to learn question?
So it was different for both of us, actually partially how, because in Al's last company, he was the CEO. And that was partially how we looked at it and said, I had never been the CEO. I'd never been fully responsible for sort of the fundraising, the external side. And I was like, this is something that I want to learn. And he was really interested in learning about and thinking about like mobile app technology and how to drive consumer behavior. And so just looking at that, you know, it was sort of like, okay, what parts do we want to be responsible for in the company? And also, like, you know, where do we want to spend the next, hopefully, decade of our lives?
Well, Selena, we're coming to the end of our time here, but I want to give you the opportunity to share any parting words with the audience on failure, any anecdotes that we didn't cover, really anything that should have been said but wasn't said.
I think the biggest thing on failure is you can't fail if you don't try. And I know that sounds so obvious, but it's this piece where a lot of people were saying, okay, you're, you know, you're 39 years old, you have two kids, like, you know, you've been pretty successful in your career. Like, why do you want to do a startup? Like, it has like this, you have a 5 to 10% chance of success. It's a startup. And maybe with your background, you know, it goes up to 15%, you know? And I thought about that and I said, it's true. Like, my most likely outcome of a startup is to fail, right? But I looked at it and said, but I'm going to learn. I'm building a product that can change people's lives. I'm going to do it with people I enjoy. It's worth that risk to potentially fail. And that's what I especially, and I don't mean to be biased, but I especially tell young women is like, take the risk, put yourself out there because it's very worth it.
It's interesting. The way you described that process there just tracks really well with the three questions that your father asked you when you went to, right? Do you enjoy working with the people you're going to be working with? Are you excited and are you learning?
For sure.
If people want to learn more about Gixo, where should they go?
Just go to the App Store, iOS, or Google Play, download the app, and then go ahead. And if you use the promo code OZON, we'll give you a special offer.
Awesome. Thank you so much for doing that. And so the promo code is going to be OZON, OZAN, and we'll put that in the show notes as well, along with any other resources that were mentioned. Selena, this was so much fun. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, OZON.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening. Two things before you take off. First, if you don't want to miss out on future episodes of Famous Failures, please subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you're listening on, and be sure to leave a review on iTunes or Google Play. Second, if you'd like to join thousands of others who receive a short email from me each Thursday with a list of articles, books, tools, quotes, and other gems that help you discover how extraordinary thinking produces extraordinary results, you can text my first name, which is OZAN, that's spelled O-Z-A-N, to 345-345. So once again, that's my first name, OZAN, O-Z-A-N, to 345-345. Or if you're in front of your computer, you can head over to ozanvarol.com and drop your email address. If you act now, you'll also get a free ebook called The Contrarian Handbook, 8 Principles to Innovate Your Thinking. As always, thank you for listening and see you next time.